some headlines from FSRN Free Speech Radio News, and we turn now to headlines from a more local source. The Tyee's Colleen Kimmett joins me over the phone to talk about some of the most recently published articles from the independent online magazine. Thanks for joining us, Colleen.
You're welcome. I'm calling from Lytton, actually. I was hiking in the Stein Valley this weekend and thought I'd be back in Vancouver by now, but I'm not. So if you hear a train whistle or some traffic, that's because I'm at a payphone on Lytton's main street.
Well, it's quite romantic to think that you're speaking to us from there. To start things off, last Monday you started telling us a little bit about smart grids and smart meters. You described it as a layer of intelligence put onto an electricity grid that allows for two-way communication between the grid, the utility, and the user. But I believe you were working on a story about how these smart grids were being developed, and you gave us a great deal as to their technological prowess. Now, earlier this week, you posted another story on the Tyee.ca about these smart grids, and you asked, is BC ready for smart meters? So, Colleen, I have to bite. Is BC ready?
Well, we are behind the U.S. That's sort of the message I got from a lot of the sources I interviewed for this story. The message really was, and this story kind of had a business angle. You know, I was talking to the tech companies that actually build smart meters or smart meter technology or smart grid-related technology, and they're saying that without a doubt, smart meters are coming, but there's a couple areas where we're behind. The first is in developing some standards around smart meters, because there are some concerns about, you know, smart meters are hooked into a network, so the utility is able to access information about a residential user's energy use via computer. So there's concerns about who is able to hack into these networks and what information would be available to them, to the utility, to other users. And the U.S. Is developing some standards and has been for a while, and Canada is just sort of getting around to that now. Just a couple of months ago, the Standards Council of Canada launched a task force looking at some of these privacy and security questions around smart meters.
So this was, to my understanding, this was a report that you'd filed thanks to some funding from the Tyee as well as others. And so it's the second in this series, I believe. Can we expect more? Will you hope to address this issue in further detail?
Well, on smart meters, yeah, definitely. I mean, there's lots of layers here, and I definitely want to get at this. Rolling out next in this series, though, it's a fairly broad-looking series, so we do want to look at other aspects of clean technology. One journalist who works often with the Tyee is Chris Poland, is working on a story about electric vehicles and a company in Vancouver that's actually retrofitting vehicles, so they install, turn a regular car, gas-guzzling car, into an electric vehicle. So not sure if there'll be any more smart meter stories in this series, but it's definitely something I want to pursue, and you'll see more of on the Tyee, I'm sure.
Well, and as I'm sure most of our listeners are aware, the Tyee is one of the great sources for that type of independent coverage of what's going on with the environment and with power in Canada. So keeping with the theme of energy and energy production, can you tell us a little bit about an article that Andrew McLeod recently published on the Tyee? Always an interesting topic. Can you tell us whether or not there is potential for some high-level government intrigue with BC Hydro's Clean Power Calls supposedly independent observer?
Yeah, well, in the legislature last week, the NDP energy critic John Horgan raised questions about the fairness of BC Hydro's clean energy call, because John Singleton, a lawyer who was selected as the independent observer to oversee BC Hydro's clean power call, turns out has done some work for BC Hydro in the past. Between 2001 and 2009, Horgan pointed out, he was paid $2.5 million. And John Singleton donated $1,000 to the BC Liberals in 2009, and his law firm, Singleton Urquhart, donated $5,000 in 2009 to the BC Liberals. And I wanted to talk about this story because it's it drew comparisons to the Kashid campaign investigation, where the special prosecutor who was assigned to look into allegations of breaking the Elections Act withdrew after revealing that he had also donated to Heed's campaign. And at the end of this month, a six-member task force that was assigned to look at finance reform in the elections is going to issue their first report. So it'll be interesting to see what that task force comes up with. There, things they're looking at are these very issues, campaign finance, contribution limits, spending limits. So that comes out in a month, and we'll be watching for what they say.
Well, I'm sure that we'll all be tuning into the TIE to find out this really interesting, I don't want to say meme, but really interesting what's going on in BC and Canadian politics. Jumping lastly to a story that resonates quite loudly at CITR, and I'm sure resonates quite loudly with those who support the TIE. Alfred Hermida recently wrote about local news in Canada. Can you tell us a little about Mr. Hermida's report on journalism in Canada?
Yeah, this was a story we republished from a new media blog on PBS.org called Media Shift. And it's about how a fallen print empire, that's CanWest, and a new media startup called OpenFile.ca are banking on an appetite for local coverage. So CanWest, some background here for your listeners who don't know, was bought for $1.1 billion, big buyout, by a veteran news executive named Paul Godfrey. So what he got was 46 dailies and weeklies, Canada.com, and the National Post. And right now, digital media is less than 10% of CanWest's revenue. And Paul Godfrey wants to increase that to 25%. And he's going to try and take a local approach, he says, by trying to build up local websites and websites affiliated with Canada.com to provide local news, which is, you know, we've got, even the TIE, we're provincial, but I think there is definitely a need and hopefully an appetite for digital media that is, you know, like a local newspaper.
And that's quite interesting in terms of the new venture startup out of Toronto, the one that's a bit more user-generated. Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yeah, OpenFile.ca launched on May 11th, and it's backed by several million dollars in venture capital, and it's headed by former CBC and CNN journalist named Wilf Dinell. And they call it Open File because they see it. They're not publishing stories because, you know, what they publish can evolve and change depending on what users send in or want to add for it, or, you know, if they want to call in news tips, that sort of thing. So they see the story, the digital story, news story, as not, you know, a finished story. It's something that keeps evolving.
So obviously this is very important, and we can't, you know, get into too much detail here. And so if people do want to check out Mr. Humida's article, they can get it on that PBS website or the TIE. But before I let you go, Colleen, I was hoping that you could tell us your opinion. How do these new ventures, how will they fare with an ongoing and disheartening decrease in print culture? And what do they mean for places like CITR News and for the TIE.ca?
Well, I think that one positive that's happening, I mean, whether these sites survive past the, you know, first 3 years is you know, I'm not sure. I wish I knew. I can't read the future. But I think whether, you know, these new startup sites survive or not, what they're building is a community of digital journalism. And I mean, for example, the story we published, you know, we republished that from PBS.org, and I see a lot more of that co-opetition between new media outlets. They're willing to share content in order to, you know, spread that great content and also maybe fill out their coverage.
Well, I'm afraid that I'm going to have to let you go. We can definitely hear the traffic in Lytton, and so I don't want to keep you any longer than we have to. But I look forward to hearing from you in 1 week's time, and maybe we could pick up some of this dialogue about media democracy and new media in, on this coming Monday's show. So thanks again for speaking with us today, Colleen.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That was Colleen Kimmett from the TAI.ca. And for more on smart grids, local news, and what's happening with BC Hydro, go to the TAI.ca. That's TheTyeE.ca. We're going to